Hi, everybody. Geraldo here. Welcome to Geraldo Rivera, the podcast. If this is your first time listening, thank you very much for tuning us in. Every week or so, I'll give you my thoughts, my opinions on the air, on the latest news. There's so much to talk about now in the age of Trump. You can have show notes if you need them. They can be found on my website, geraldo.com. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Geraldo Rivera and on Facebook, Geraldo Rivera. All these links are in the show notes. Again, thanks for tuning us in. Here now the show. Hi, everybody. We are live on Facebook. This is Geraldo Rivera, the podcast. That's Brother Craig over there. How are you today? Beautiful, beautiful day in New York City. It is the 16th day of May. It is Tuesday, and this is the 19th edition of the podcast. If you are watching on Facebook Live, feel free to drop me a note, and I will, if I can, address your questions or your concern. Basically, I want to talk about this latest quote-unquote scandal involving President Trump. But let me say more generally to begin that there is no doubt but that my friend Donald Trump, a man I've known for 40 years, a man who was elected to the stunned surprise of almost everybody in the world, there is no doubt but that he continues to stir the pot in clumsy, impetuous ways. He's spontaneous, he's off the cuff, he is improvisational, and not always to his benefit. He makes mistakes, and surely we've heard enough about his various mistakes. Some of them are real, like the firing of James Comey more than 100 days after he should have fired him, because James Comey, after all, in my view, was the dork who creeped out the 2016 election. But to fire him, in May, not on January 20th, his first day in office, was a mistake. But the main point I want to make here, or among the main points I want to make, is that the coverage of President Trump is unrelentingly mean-spirited. It is unrelentingly negative. It is angry, and it is exaggerated. I really believe that he is being given a very, very unfair shake right now. The Washington Post, for example, is a great newspaper. But this latest story about Trump sharing classified information with the Russians, the story that was so stunningly dropped on us at 5:15 p.m. on Monday evening, made it seem as if the president, called this meeting with the Russians, and then just because he's careless, started sharing secrets. Hey, you hear the one about our nuclear code? That's not what happened. Not what happened at all. First of all, when it comes to the U.S. and Russia, I believe that to stop the carnage in Syria, we have to ally with Russia. We don't have to cooperate with the Russians on all things, just on this thing, fighting ISIS, fighting terrorism. So here's what I think happened, and I don't know for a fact what happened, but here's what I think. He had the meeting with the Russian foreign minister and the Russian ambassador at the White House. And as he had this meeting, he said, I am hearing, I don't know for a fact, Donald Trump, said to the Russians, we have a source, a great source in the Middle East who tells us that I'll address your comments later as I go on. But we have a source who tells us that what President Trump was telling the Russians was that his intelligence source in the Middle East says ISIS has developed a brand new computer-based bomb. In other words, that was what was behind the banning of laptops on all those Emirates flights and other flights from certain countries. We started banning the laptops. Obviously, when we started banning the laptops, it was because we figured out, or our spies told us, that ISIS had perfected a way to disguise bombs in computers. So the president shared that with the Russians. Why would you not share that with the Russians? I mean, first of all, I guess it's classified because maybe somebody in the Mossad told our spy that the ISIS bomb makers had perfected this technique. Maybe the source of the information was technically classified. But this is the kind of information that should be widely shared and certainly shared with the Russians. Remember what happened to the Russians. In 2015, their airliner was blown out of the sky by a bomb that was planted on the aircraft. Over 100 civilians were killed. Why wouldn't a civilized nation tell another civilized nation that there is this threat? Why wouldn't the president divulge this information? Let's say it's classified technically. Who says it's classified, first of all? Isn't the president the person who decides what is classified and what is not? That's not a legislative function. That's an executive function. President Trump defines what is classified and what is not classified. I mean, the Washington Post made it sound like he was giving away the nuclear codes. As I said, this is ridiculous. This is part of the hubris that the press has ginned up around this man. It's almost as if he can do no good now. He cannot do well because they don't like him. Unrelentingly, unremittingly hostile coverage. Of course he should have shared that information with the Russians. If I were him, I would have had a press conference and announced to the world this supposed secret that he shared with the Russians. And for the first time, for really the first time, I'm beginning to think that the leak of that discussion with the Russians is a bigger story than what was said by the president, the classified information shared with the Russians. It is mildly interesting that the president shared the classified information, if I am correct, and it has to do with computer bombs. That is mildly interesting. But it is also, is it not fascinating that almost everything that this president does gets leaked even to the Washington Post, the New York Times, or some other hostile news agency? And there is also no doubt but that the vast majority of the media is against this man. They want him to fail. They want him to fail. Now, Thibault says the leakers need to be exposed and prosecuted. You know, I don't like reporters getting hounded and persecuted and prosecuted. I think that that makes us very defensive. We reporters as a class makes us very defensive. And the same with Lisa Cronin Cruikshank. You know, they need to be made an example of. I guess, but that's to me is less important than plugging the leaks. He should have a reasonable expectation of confidentiality. What if everything you said, wherever you said it, whether in your home, I think I'm cutting my head off here, whether in your home or in your office, what if everything you said, I'm rapping with my brother. What if everything I said to my brother was then public? You know, what a cruddy way to live. And this is a cruddy way to run an Oval Office, or to have an Oval Office. One where your best friends or the people surrounding you in the most intimate circumstances are ratting you out to the press. You get that, Greg? I think it really is very, very disheartening. The concern is who is leaking all classified information, asks Edward Sanchez Gonzalez. You know, yes, that is a big concern. It is a big concern who is leaking this information. But I go back to this point. Let's say that the president of the United States told the Russians that ISIS was developing this new lethal computer-based bomb designed to bring down commercial airliners. Why not tell the Russians? Why not tell the Chinese? Why not tell the Somalians? Why not tell the Canadians? Why not tell the tall people, the fat people, the short people, the skinny people, the black, brown, yellow, red, white people? Tell everybody. Tell everybody. This is absolutely intolerable the way every misstep is exaggerated. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that I think the president is doing a good job? In some ways, he is. I think Gorsuch, from the Republican point of view, was a brilliant choice. I think that the Republican intransigence last year on picking the SCOTUS appointee turned out to be brilliant. They got the man they wanted instead of Merrick Garland, a person that I would have preferred. But that's good. That was great. I mean, that was a great success for the president. But, you know, everything else he's trying to do is getting gummed up. And even this example where, you know, this gleefully hostile media is really giving him the business. You know, this angry, exaggerated, exacerbating coverage of the president is really, really unfair. And this talk of impeachment, come on. Come on, Julio. Impeach him for what? What's the high crime and misdemeanor? That's the other thing about the whole Russia scandal. I mean, here's my problem. Donald Trump meets with the Russians. The purpose of the meeting was not, we are told, for him to reveal the secret about the computer bomb, but he had to meet the Russians for whatever reason. I don't know why they were even on the schedule. First of all, if I'm the chief of staff, if I'm Rens Priebus of the president, I'm going to say to the president, you know, you got plenty of time to meet those Russians. Why don't you just wait until Putin comes to the United States or Putin comes to the United Nations, or you and Putin are together in some European capital, some Asian capital, then you meet the Russians. But to meet the Russians right now, after Comey was just fired because Comey said that General Mike Flynn lied and the Russia story and the investigation is open, now is the day you're going to meet the Russians and let TASS, the Russian news agency, take your picture being chummy with the Russians? I mean, the optics of that is crazy. I don't understand that at all. I mean, to me, that example, that somebody let the president meet the Russians and let them take pictures of him being lovey-dovey with them, that's what leads to the impression. And then the story following that he leaked the secrets to them during that chummy meeting. Where's the staff that could have prevented the president from committing that huge faux pas, the optics of which were so terrible? There he's meeting with the Russians the week after the FBI director is fired because he says the Russian investigation is open. You know, it doesn't do President Trump any good. And if the president of the United States is embattled, it doesn't do any Americans any good. I think a couple of things have to happen. I think that the president has to have a restart. I really do. President Trump needs to say to the American people, you know, we've done some clumsy things. I've been impetuous. But a couple of things are going to happen now. First of all, I know you enjoy my tweets, but I'm going to be more measured in the way I use that powerful medium, social media. I'm going to be much more measured. I'm going to be much more professional in my approach. He doesn't have to eat crow precisely, but he's got to let people know that the sloppy, unforced errors, you know, in tennis, when you keep hitting the ball into the net, unforced errors, he's got to stop the unforced errors. The world is dangerous enough. North Korea and so forth with the missiles and, you know, there's so much going on. This president needs to tell the American people that these goofy, amateur mistakes will stop here. This talk of impeachment is, in many ways, I don't want to say ignorant, because I know that you are well-meaning. You know, I know that you want the best for the country. But the president has to do something wrong to be impeached, like Russiagate. They're comparing it to Watergate. The difference is, in Watergate, there was a real burglary. There was a crime that then the politicians were lying about and covering up. What's the crime in Russiagate? What's the underlying crime? It's not a crime to cheer on WikiLeaks as much as I detest them. It's not a crime to cheer on the Russians handing WikiLeaks John Podesta's emails. As long as the United States or our operatives or Trump campaign aides did not aid and abet the hacking that led to the Russians getting our information, it's not a crime for them to say, I love WikiLeaks, as the president did in the middle of the campaign. That's not a crime. It's not impeachable. Where's the impeachment? There needs to be a high crime or misdemeanor like President Clinton. President Clinton lied under oath in the Paula Jones deposition. He was caught lying under oath. That's why he was disbarred for a time. He's a lawyer who's disbarred because he committed a crime of perjury. There's no allegation that President Trump was committed the crime of perjury, lied to federal officials, or lied under oath. That's the main danger to these politicians. It's never the act, it's always the cover-up. So as long as President Trump doesn't tell tales out of school under oath or to federal officials, there's not a crime. My loving wife is calling, I gotta call her back. That's not a crime. So there can't be an impeachment. So stop dreaming about it. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when Trump was collecting delegates and he was a sure thing to be nominated to get the Republican nomination. And still, entire shows on MSNBC and on CNN were devoted to, well, if he gets, Ted Cruz gets, Jesus to come down in Texas, and, John Kasich gets, the Prophet Muhammad to come down in Toledo, Ohio, we're going to deny Trump the nomination. But it was just like totally bogus. It was totally the depriving of Trump of the nomination was totally bogus, just like this impeachment talk is totally bogus. When you hear someone mention impeachment, you know they're being intellectually lazy. There is no impeachment there. There is, you got to let this guy do his thing. But he has not been perfect. He has fed fodder to his critics. He has allowed them to create an impression of a White House in crisis. He needs to go a couple of days without any scandal, anything new coming up. He's got to be focused on getting the job done. He was brilliant in real estate. Now he can be brilliant in politics. But you can't do it by doing it on the fly. You can't do it spontaneously. You can't do it making it up as you go along. That would never work. All right, Rhonda Jacobs says that I'm funny. I know who's intellectually lazy, our president of the United States. You know, I think he's got his hands full. I don't think that he's in over his head. I think that he can do the job. But you know something? There is absolutely no doubt but the fact that he has a giant bullseye on his back. In a way that I have not seen, and I'm old enough to know or to remember, I have not seen this since Richard Nixon, 1972-1973. He's not a buffoon, Norris, Norrie Grantham. He's not a buffoon. You know, Pat Woodcock, I think that when you're saying shame on you all, you're talking about some of the people writing nasty things about Trump right now. He's not a buffoon. He's an intelligent, highly intelligent person who is now being taken advantage of because of his inexperience. And he is being ill-served and has been ill-served from Inauguration Day on by people like Steve Bannon. I don't know Steve Bannon. But if Steve Bannon was indeed responsible for the hostile tone of President Trump's inauguration, his inaugural address, then shame on him. He shouldn't be in that job, Steve Bannon. That inauguration should have been a time of kumbaya. It should have been a time where President Trump said, I know only half the country voted for me, or even slightly less than half of the country voted for me, but I want to let you know that I'm going to be president to all Americans. We're in this together. We sink or swim together. We're going to go forward together. We're going to make America. He could have even used America First, make America great again, all that stuff, but be inclusive. Talking about minority rights and equality and inclusion and one nation under God and all the rest of it. So he has to reset the first 100 days. I want to erase from our memories. And let's start, we're deep into or significantly into the second 100 days. He's really got to change this tone. He's got to get this ship going, stop these self-inflicted wounds. They really are self-inflicted wounds. Like Carlos Muniz, impeach, I guess you mean. For what? For what? Norris, he's a buffoon. He's not a buffoon. Stop it. Stop with this impeach. I mean, it's just like ridiculous. It's just, you don't want to hear facts. You only want to hear yourself saying these negative things because you don't like him. I mean, a lot of the problem is he's consistently being humiliated by the comics. You know, they say that he's had twice as many bad jokes told about him than any president in history. I mean, part of the reason is there's more shows than ever. And with social media, there's plenty more outlets for the hostile jokes. But like Saturday Night Live, I mean, how is he ever going to get out from the shadow of Alec Baldwin? I mean, it is such an effective put-down with Alec Baldwin playing Donald Trump as a buffoon that it's hard to see the real Donald Trump when you see him and not think of Alec Baldwin. Humiliation is a very, very effective way to put somebody down. It is, and I totally get that. The disrespect, as Pat says, is being shown our president is profound and widespread. I mean, it's funny, though. I mean, the jokes are funny. I mean, when the president started making out with Sean Spicer, a.k.a. Melissa McCarthy, Saturday night, it was riotously funny. I mean, Kate McKenna is a genius as Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Only to say about General Sessions. As hopeful as I am that the president of the United States can turn around this initial 100-day, not catastrophe, but mediocre performance, I think Attorney General Jeff Sessions is the wrong man for the job. I mean, with all due respect to the former senator, to declare a new war on drugs right now, and that drug criminals are going to get the mandatory minimum sentencing and all the rest. All it's going to do is fill the jails with more black men, young black men. President Obama was absolutely right. You've got the drug war, so-called, the $1 trillion we spent on that, aside from decimating minority families, Latino and black families, what has it really accomplished? People will find a drug to make them high. And I think a thoughtful approach, first of all, you can't go backwards in terms of legalizing marijuana. If you think that marijuana is like heroin, you just don't understand what's going on. I think that General Sessions is, if you want the president to thrive and succeed, you need people around him. You need people around him who are going to do their jobs and be reasonable for all the people of the United States, not just, the very narrow constituencies. This president has to get on with his budget. He's got to get on with his tax reform plan. He's doing okay in terms of immigration. As long as the wall is not built, tough talk has already been very effective in cutting undocumented immigration across the southern border by 3/4. So there really already has been a meaningful impact that can be pointed to by the president. He can claim success on that and not spend a dime on that ridiculous wall that's just going to cost tens of billions of dollars and not accomplish anything but keeping out housekeepers and lawnmowers and fruit pickers. But you got to give this president a chance. And the people around him have to do their jobs without creating unnecessary controversy like General Sessions did with his controversial remarks about, maximum punishment for drug offenders. If you're going to go out, by the way, P.S., if you're going after drug offenders, you should go after the big drug companies that are manufacturing OxyContin and these other opioid-based drugs, creating the opiate addiction epidemic that is unprecedented. Go after them. They're the ones. They know that they're producing far more of the lethal pharmaceuticals than is needed to legitimately service the patients who are legitimately prescribed an opioid for pain relief. They know. Go after them. Don't go after the kid who's smoking pot in his mother's basement. It's ridiculous. All right, that's about all I have to say today. I do believe that when all is said and done in this big Russia story, Russiagate's going to turn out to be a big nothing. I really do believe that. And the people who go down on Russiagate will all be people like General Mike Flynn, who lied about their participation rather than the people who actively shared information or advice or counsel with the Russians during the election. I think the funny thing is that if the election were held today, I bet you Donald Trump would still win. I bet he would still win against Hillary Clinton. And who are the Democrats going to put up next time? I like Al Franken, actually. I do like Al Franken. He was funny on Saturday Night Live. I think he's been a good senator from Minnesota, and I think that he would be a good candidate. Better, for example, than Elizabeth Warren would be. Give Trump a chance. Give him a chance. He is all of our presidents. Just give him a chance, you know. And in terms of the media, take a deep breath when you hear one of these scandals, so-called, and say, is this real? Is this story real? Washington Post made it sound like Trump was a Russian spy, the Manchurian candidate. It's really very, very unfortunate, unfair. It's a great newspaper, don't get me wrong. And I think the fact that the Amazon guy, Bezos, bought the Washington Post and that they have, you know, a fad budget to do investigative reporting, that's great. Just be fair. Just be fair. Okay, let me get Tebow. You're kidding. Franken is an embarrassment to the entire country. Well, that's your opinion. R.M. Mahoney, I noticed snowflakes speak a lot of doo-doo. What's a snowflake again? What is that? Is that like a liberal is a snowflake? Where does snowflake come from? It's like dandruff? Sean Hannity. No, I think the Washington Post is a great newspaper, Stan. Tracy, thank you very much, Tracy. Give POTUS a chance. Lynn Coxborough, bye, Geraldo. Love you back. Thanks for watching, everybody. See ya.